Right here on KPFK at 2 o'clock, where you'll hear ska, rock steady, roots, dub, and dancehall. Every Sunday afternoon at 2, right here on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
I'm going to tell you a number of things.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by my co-host and attorney specializing in automotive law, Motor Press Guild member, and owner of two Mazdas, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Great to be back on air with you and our co-host, who you're going to introduce.
I am the man with his name on more media entities than Carl Icahn, industry veteran, senior analyst at iccars.com, host of the YouTube channel Carl Brower Cars, which gives you a hint as to what his name is. And now he is co-host of a nationally syndicated show, radio show called The Drive Radio. Carl Brower, welcome, Carl.
Woo! All right. Thank you for allowing me to be on once again, Mark and Michelle. I enjoy being here with you guys, and I'm thrilled that we have yet another guest this week's show, because I haven't talked to him forever, and he's got a great history in the industry.
He does. We are bringing on today a man who has saved me many times in Japan, in the Roppongi district of Tokyo. I can't tell you how many times the Yakuza had my hand on the table ready to chop off my pinky, and he stepped in. He said, no, he's okay. A longtime editor at Road and Track back in the glory days of Road and Track, who is now a consultant and author. He's written movie scripts. He's written books. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Matani. Sam, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mark. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you're repaying your debts now. This is good.
I am. I you don't get away with anything.
And nice to see you again, Carl. And Michelle, I think this is the first time we're meeting, so nice to meet you.
You too.
Digitally.
So Sam knows that we go through a little bit of calendar stuff here, but we are going to get to Sam's latest production here, the trilogy, the final book in the trilogy that he has written, set in the world of automotive journalism. So you know there's going to be a lot of shrimp. But first, we're going to tell you a couple of things going on around the Southern California area. Tomorrow, Sunday, November 2nd, in Woodley Park, Van Nuys, my favorite show of the entire year, The Best of France and Italy. It's a great show that draws seemingly every cool little sputtering mechanical miscreant that those two countries ever made. I'm talking about France and Italy. There have been, in the past at this show, there's been a Bugatti Type 57, numerous Ferraris. There was a Chiesetta Moroder one day. I talked to that guy. He was right there. He is sadly no longer with us. There are Lamborghinis, Maseratis, all of those things that you would expect. But the rest of the thing is the best part about the show is that it celebrates the less expensive, less flashy cars that ordinary Italians and French people drove. For instance, it has been confirmed there will be a Lancia Appia there, a 61 Appia, if it makes it down the freeway. It's got to get down the 210 all the way out to the valley there. But you can see that. You can see a whole bunch of really cool cars. There's always a huge contingent of Alfa Romeos there. Every French car that runs is in the LA area is going to be there. And so there's about, I think, 13 or 14 of those. It's a fun show. Woodley Park in Van Nuys. Can't miss it. It's going all day tomorrow, Sunday. One other thing, if you need an excuse for a road trip, the Ferrari Club of America's Southwest region has a really fun drive. They all get together and they drive up to the Santa Paula airport, and the airport is holding an open house. So you can go out there. You see all the Ferraris. You see cool airplanes that they pull out of the hangars. They open up the hangars. You can see them. You can talk to the airplane owners. You can talk to the Ferrari owners. And there's a place up there to get lunch. The Santa Paula Airport, I think, was the last stop for Steve McQueen and Von Dutch. And it's got some history of its own over the years. So that's also tomorrow, Sunday, November 2nd. At Santa Paula Airport. Michelle, there's something going on down in Orange County. What is it?
Yes. Timely reminder, daylight savings time tonight. So when you're going to go to your Cars and Coffee or whatever tomorrow morning, just make sure you're not late, right? This is the fall back, so you get an extra hour. Tomorrow morning, we have Tustin Legacy Cars and Coffee. Oh, sorry. We have Segerstrom Shelby Event Center Cars and Coffee, excuse me on that, from 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. And even though it's at the Shelby Event Center, it's open to all makes and models. Any year is fine. You do not have to pre-register either. So this is a very casual type event. The Center VP, Ray Segerstrom, has told me that at this particular Cars and Coffee, they're asking for unwrapped toys to bring for donations. And these will go to Chips for Kids. And that's the CHP organization that is a charity. And they distribute the toys to the needy kids in December. So if you can't make it tomorrow, she tells me they will have a collection box in the Shelby Center starting on Monday. If you want to make that donation, but can't make it to the Cars and Coffee. The center is off the 5 freeway. It's on the Sand Canyon exit. And the address is 5 Watney here in Irvine. So, and then I wanted to mention the Tustin Legacy Cars and Coffee, which is November 9th. And that's from 7:30 to 10 a.m. This is Carnacopia Sunday. That's what they're calling it. And this is cars that we're thankful for. And this particular Cars and Coffee, they wanted me to let you guys know that it has returned to its original schedule of the second Sunday of the month. You do not have to register in advance for this one either. All years, makes, and models are welcome. And the address is 1705 Flightway in Tustin. That's off Red Hill and Barranca. All right.
Michelle, where would I go if I wanted to see ground-pounding, nitro-fueled wheel standers?
Well, you have to go to the In-N-Out Burger drag strip in Pomona, where they're going to have the Mission Foods NHRA Finals on November 13th to 16th. That is the end of the season. So it all comes down to Pomona. That's their catchphrase. Go to NHRA.com to get your tickets. And every pass includes a pit pass. Always.
That's right. Always. And if you have a gas mask, bring it. Because it's so much fun to stand downwind when they're in the pits and they're firing up the engine. Stand downwind and watch everybody run screaming and crying as the nitro fumes overtake them, and you'll be sitting there with your surplus gas mask laughing at everybody. You'll get the respect of, you know, whoever's going to be there. I don't know.
This is after they were laughing at you for wearing the gas mask, but like you said, Mark, he who coughs last,
he who breathes last in the pits of Pomona.
And then you get the nuts who love the nitro burn, so there you go. It takes all courage.
Yeah. All right. One other thing, Cal Club, the sports car club that started it all that great racing and got, that's where Phil Hill got his start. It's where everybody got their start. Cal Club's 75th anniversary at Button Willow, November 15th. Go to Cal Club HQ at calclub.com, I guess, is their address. And one more thing, Lions Automobilia Foundation, proud to present the inaugural. That's better than first annual. Inaugural Lions Automotive Art and Design Experience on Saturday, November 22nd, 4 to 8 p.m. They're going to have a bunch of artists there. Ed Justice Jr., the photographer, will be there. Fireball Tim Lawrence, who does all kinds of movie cars, he'll be there. Hot Rod Von Valdez, the master of the fine line, will be there. Even Dave Merrick, the head of Acura Design, he will be there too. That is on Saturday, November 22nd from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Lions Automobilia Foundation, 2790 East Del Amo Boulevard in Rancho Dominguez. Go to lionsautomobilia.org. Okay, that's it. We set a world record for the calendar this year because we have our special guest, Sam Mattani. Sam, are you still there?
I'm still here, yes.
Okay. Sam is a
riveted with all. I'm riveted with all the stuff going on with you guys.
If I could tell you all the great stories that Sam and I have experienced over the years, I could write a book. But Sam actually did write a book, and like I say, we're going to get to that in just a second. We got to get through the news here first. First of all, Carl, Michelle, and I all saw a camouflaged 2027 Telluride. What did you guys think of that?
Well, what did you think, Michelle? I thought that as the vehicle that is pretty much led that brand to in everything from its profits to its sales growth, you know, that thing sold 60,000 units its first year in, I believe it was 2019, and now it's up to 120,000. So this is a really important car, but they camoed it, so it was hard for you to see what it actually looked like. But I think to me, the main takeaway that we can talk about at this point, at least, is just their most important vehicle, probably what drives a as much or more of the profit than any other model, is getting completely redesigned. So it's that whole don't fix what ain't broken thing. Let's see what they can do.
What'd you think, Kia, Michelle?
Yeah, well, Kia is literally 5 minutes from my house, and someone who works for them lives in my neighborhood. And when I was out for my walk one night, I told Mark, I said, God, there's a spy. I see a spy vehicle. And I took photos and sent them to him. And then we had Jack Walsworth on, and he had his idea that it might be the new Telluride. And we saw in the wheel well, the giveaway was it actually had the Kia logo, right? So we knew it was the Kia. Well, I took those out at the event and showed them to the designers, and they confirmed that that is, and he's still driving it. It's still there because they are still working on the interior components, and meaning the engine. So yeah, it's still interesting.
We can't say all the stuff that we learned about it. Some of it's under embargo, but we can say we can talk about the camo wrapped Telluride. And I'll just share my quick impression, then we'll move on to the next topic here. But I just thought it was way too big and blocky. I really liked that previous Telluride design. I just thought to make your basic two box SUV look attractive, I think they did such a good job with that. And now this one looks, I don't know, looks like an EV9 maybe. Maybe I'm too critical.
Well,
I don't think there's any maybe about it, Mark. I look at you just ripping into Kia's all their hard work. But
after they give you all that shrimp.
All that shrimp, and this is how I thank them.
You can't be bought off by shrimp. I'm impressed, Mark. What were you saying, Sam?
I have a question. Does the Telluride outsell anything that Hyundai makes too? Or
I think it outsells the Palisade.
Well, the Palisade is the sister vehicle, right?
Yeah. The Hyundai Palisade is, they're the same car with the different brands. Right. And I think most people feel like the Telluride's the better looking car in the current version, at least.
And it costs a little bit more, but we'll go for the Telluride. Yeah.
I think generally Kias look better than Hyundai. I think the Hyundai's, they took a kind of a risky design kind of,
Kia big credit because they hired Strayer, you know, the German designer years ago, like 10 or 15 years ago.
Right.
And from they hired Audi, right? him. Yes. He came, I think it was from Audi, and he came in and he just started making these beautiful Kias, and it was only a couple of years. And then, you know, kind of Hyundai's kind of the more parent-y company between the two. They were like, we're going to have a whole new design team, and Peter's going to be the design team head for everything. Basically, it was like they were getting sick of watching little brother have better looking cars than them. So then they just made him the head of the whole, like, you know, the whole automotive, whatever it is, Hyundai Motor Group that has that Genesis, Hyundai, and Kia. And now Peter's trying to make them all look good. But I agree with you, Sam. I still feel like Kia's team seemed to generally have the edge. So
yeah, they did. The French curve was theirs. All right, we're moving on. Right now, if you want to fly to Tokyo till November 9th, you can still see the Japan Mobility Show, formerly known as the Tokyo Motor Show. That is going on. We have all been looking at and writing stories about the cars that have debuted there. Carl brought up an interesting thing. Actually, Carl, why don't you tell us about the Prime Minister?
Yeah, I just thought it was really cool in the midst of all this Japanese motor show or a mobility show. Now news. There was news that the first female prime minister was just put in place in Japan, which would be kind of interesting no matter what. But the fact that she is a apparently serious car enthusiast, she drove a Mark III, I believe, Supra for something like 10 or 15, I don't know, was it 20? A long time as her daily driver. It was her daily driver. It was a manual shift Toyota Mark III Supra. And then she got to a point where she was supposed to be like, I think it's like required that you're using limousines or you know, you're using government transportation to move you around. So she couldn't drive it anymore. But she didn't just sell it. She put it in storage. And then last year in 2024, even before she got to be prime minister, she had it completely restored by some expert Toyota guy out of, I think it's Naria is how it's pronounced. But she had it completely restored. So I don't know how much more serious of a car enthusiast you could be than driving a car like that daily in like Japan. I mean, it's probably not the easiest. Maybe she's not in Tokyo, but I don't know. Just I'm sure it had a three pedal vehicle. She was driving it daily and then she wouldn't let it go even when she didn't need it anymore. And she restored it. So I think that's great.
That's always a good thing. Sam, how do you pronounce the name of the new prime minister?
Takaichi.
Takaichi. And the first name?
Sanae.
Sanae Takaichi. Thank you, Sam. One of his many talents. He, of course, is fluent in Japanese. So
arigato, Sam.
Yeah. Yes. We had someone on the show this week that wouldn't let us, that kept us from destroying her name. So thank you very much, Sam.
Yeah. The more you talk to Sam, the more you appreciate his many talents. So what else is going on at the Japan Mobility Show? Sam, you've looked at a lot of the stuff there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the biggest kind of the surprise to me was the Toyota coming up with the reviving the name Century. The Century was, for those of you who don't know, because it was never marketed here, but the Century was the sedan for bosses. You know, it could be a Yakuza boss, it could be a corporation boss. I mean, I guess around 20 years ago, it was about $100,000 then, right? So it was a very, very high priced car. And at one point it came powered by a V12, which Toyota never put into another car, right? So it was a boss car, and it was, I think, discontinued a few years ago. You know, I can't remember when, but it hasn't been around for a while. And then they brought it back for the Japan Mobility Show just a few days ago. They unveiled it. And it's this weird looking huge SUV crossover type thing with doors that slide open kind of sideways. And yeah, that was the big news. I mean, Subaru had that ST whatever. It's really cool looking car.
Before we move away from Century, yeah. Sam, what do you think? Yeah. Are they going to bring that to the US, the Century brand?
I think so. I think it would make sense
to go global with it because it's obviously
exactly.
They've got a sedan, a coupe, and an SUV, and there's a global market for that. Rolls Royce. I mean, it's patterned almost exactly around Rolls Royce's product line, very close to Bentley's product line. And
that's right, correct.
They got to be quality, and you know, I guess most of them, the other two of them are meant to be. You're meant to be driven in, but the third one. Akio Toyota said he told the chief engineer, make me something that I can drive. So the coupe is maybe a driver's car. And it sounds like a global market waiting to be tapped.
You say coupe, I say coupe, you know, still the
coupes are for chicken, Sam.
Good old US American. But
you've been in America too long, Sam.
But I think you're absolutely right. I think they're going to go after or try to, you know, challenge the really high-end luxury car market with that. And yeah, it makes sense for them to do it globally because, you know, the Crown, Toyota Crown was a car that was only marketed in Japan for the longest time. And then they brought the Crown name badge here. I'm not a big fan of the vehicle because, you know, the old Crown used to be this really beautiful looking sedan. I'm sorry, saloon. And,
that's British.
We used to that. Oh, okay. Well, coupe salute. But the Crown they brought here. So yeah, it just makes sense. Let's bring the Century back. It reeks of luxury, and we'll give it to the whole world kind of thing. So
I hope they do. It'd be kind of cool to have that here, and I'm not just saying that so that I can get invited to more trips with Shrimp Iron.
I don't think they announced what is going to be powering it. So we don't know. I don't think it That's right. It's electric. Yeah. So
yeah, we don't know if it's electric, hybrid, or gas.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I did see? Well, we're still talking about Toyota here. One car that looked really exciting to me. Now, I didn't go to the show, so I'm just doing this on the internet, but the Toyota FTSE is this electric coupe or coupe. Okay. We'll just say coupe.
Oh, yeah.
That thing looks, that looks really cool. It looks like it could be an affordable car. It looks beautiful, and it could be just a fan. And it's made by Gazoo Racing. So, the FTSE by Toyota. You can see all this, of course, at autoweek.com. Just go there, click on all my articles. That's all I ask. But it looks cool.
It looks like a Ferrari fighter, you know?
It does. You are right. It looks like very much like a Ferrari, and it's just a Toyota. So let's hope good things come from that. And on the same platform is an SUV, the Toyota FT3E, which, you know, just looks like sort of like any old thing.
I think, go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was going to move on to the Lexus Sport concept.
Oh, right.
We saw at the Quail. I didn't go to the Quail this year, but it debuted there. The exterior debuted. Yeah. What did you think of that, Sam?
I like the LFA better, you know, and plus the paint scheme they put on that weird kind of weird bluish, grayish kind of.
It was great, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it. So it didn't really knock my socks off, just the looks of it. So, you know, I mean, it's got the long hood. I'm sorry, bonnet, Mark. It's, you know, the hood. And, you know, it's it's got those, you know, crazy classic front engine, rear wheel drive proportions. But, you know, we'll see. To me, the LFA still look better because, you know, this is being billed as the LFA successor, right? So
yeah, right. And they also had a Toyota Corolla concept there that looked unlike any Corolla you've ever seen.
Oh yeah,
it's got four doors and what looks like, I don't know, they used to call it a lift back, but I don't know how that opens up, but that looks very sporty too. So remember, Akio Toyota said many years ago something along the lines of no boring cars.
Yes, there.
Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing.
No more boring cars.
Yeah, I think the whole theme of this Japan Mobility Show is, hey, you know, we know China's right there. Mm-hmm. We know China's going to be taking over this whole damn global automotive market with their electric cars at some point someday. Cause they're, you know, I mean, there's just so far ahead of everyone, you know, I mean, with, you know, producing these cars in mass numbers and price in Japan, you know, a country right next to it is, I think, starting to feel the heat and says, hey, you know, we got to be a little different. Because we're not going to be able to beat China at at their own game. So I think this is this Japan Mobility Show is just kind of showing us, hey, you know, we're still going to keep passion, you know, in driving intact and not just, you know, produce cars like refrigerators one after another. So,
yeah. And that was just Lexus, Toyota and Daihatsu. Daihatsu had some cool little cars, you know, K-class cars. Lexus had a catamaran. Like, where did that come from? And they had on their stand one of those Joby air taxis too. So good luck with that. Carl, did you see anything? I know you've been looking at what was at Tokyo. Did you see anything you liked?
I mean, kind of like what Sam was saying is I just like the idea that the Japanese car companies seem to be more interested, especially Toyota, in having fun. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of the LC 500. I guess it's just called the LC now, but when Lexus did that, when they took that concept car that everyone fell in love with and made pretty much the exact thing that was on the concept stage as a production car, I consider that one of the more attractive, you know, cars built in the, you know, I like if I was going to list the top 10 or certainly 20 best looking cars in the history of the automobile, that LC would be in there. So that was like the first sign I saw that was like, these guys are ready to have fun. And now we're talking about centuries, you know, and we're talking about, you know, that Ferrari looking car that's coming. So, and I think that's a good call, Sam, is that, you know, we can't just try to make the best kind of mainstream consumer car. We can make those too. And those are good to make. They pay a lot of bills, but we need the brand to stand out with something more than just really good consumer cars. And I think Akio Toyota had been saying that for a couple of years anyways, and it's probably more important than ever now with China right there.
Did you guys see the Mazda concepts?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, Michelle, what did you think?
Well, I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, you're our Mazda expert. You're our resident Mazda expert. Exactly. Yeah, what did you think?
So all of the platforms that I've, you know, got on Facebook and everything were going crazy over this Vision Cross Coupe, which is the 503 horsepower, two rotor turbo engine, you know, electric, four door fastback, plug in hybrid with 99 mile range, all electric, and 500 combined. So this was like, wow, this, and it looks great. What did you think, Sam?
Oh, I thought it was really cool too. I mean, I think, to tell you the truth, I love every design that Mazda's coming out with, and especially their, you know, since the Kodo, remember the KODO, the Kodo philosophy of those sports cars. And yeah, this one, it caught my eye too, Michelle. I just said, whoa, okay. And then, you know, the powertrain and all that stuff you're talking about, I'm just going, yeah, I mean, yeah. Mazda's still bringing it, you know, so which is really good to see.
And the Rotary fans were happy too. So
yeah, exactly. I'm a big Rotary guy. Yes.
Yeah. The two rotor, is that, is it a series or a parallel hybrid? In other words, does the rotor just charge the battery and then the wheels are driven electrically, or do we know yet if the rotor is going to directly charge the wheels or not?
Yes, we know it is going to. Yes. Okay. We operate Thank independently.
All right.
Yes.
It would make more sense. I'm not an engineer, but I play one on the radio. It would make more sense and be more efficient to charge the battery pack with the rotors, because those are very efficient, small, compact engines, as you know, and you just charge the battery pack with that at a constant, whatever the most efficient RPM is, and then you get instantaneous torque from the electric motors. So that's my two cents, Mazda, if you're listening.
Well, you know, it's been done before, though, right, Mark?
It's been done, and that's why I'm saying it would make the most sense, I think.
I don't think Audi was able to call it a rotary, but you know, the Wankel, right? The Wankel.
Wankel. Yeah, Felix Wankel invented it. So,
and then don't forget the Vision Cross Compact, which is the hatch, which in size, I mean, I saw some dimensions on this. It was small. It's smaller than the current Mazda 3. And they showed it in red. It looks a little bit like a cross between a Mini Cooper and maybe an old Mazda 2. And I thought I saw some VW Bug in there, but it's super cute. Yeah, super cute. But they didn't give any specifics on power. You know,
no, they didn't.
Fun. The theme was fun and creativity, and for some reason everyone seems to like that, and it's resonating quite well with everyone who sees these vehicles, huh? Imagine,
Carl, they're the BYD and those Chinese guys, they got cars at the Japan Mobility Show, so you know they're always saying, hey, don't overlook us yet, you know. So
was it a BYD that set the electric car record at the Nürburgring just recently? I can't remember. It was a supercar. And it was from China, and so everybody else is back there, you know, they're retuning their EVs so that they can crack the record again.
Plus the technology that the Chinese are bringing in their EVs is just blowing everyone else out of the water.
Like the connectivity and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How things work inside the cabin.
It's amazing what you can do in a country when, well, let's just say the citizens are properly motivated, and that's all I'll say on that.
You know, we do have a lawyer here, so she could.
I could speak to human rights. Sure. Don't get me started.
What's funny is I don't see any of us on this show, or probably anyone listening to the show, being like, you know, that's it. I'm leaving America. I'm going to join the Chinese automotive industry and help them make these fabulous cars.
Hey, who here has been to China? Sam, you've been to China.
I've been to Hong Kong, so which is part of China. So yeah,
I've been to Chengdu, which is way in the middle of China. Any you guys, my other two colleagues here, have you been to China?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. It's it's an experience. I went there for the Michelin Bibendum Challenge, which is an alternative fuel thing. But it was just fascinating walking around Chengdu. We were there was a small group of us. I was the shortest one there, and I'm over 6 feet tall. So we were looked upon like space aliens, and people were either like, you know, wow, look at these guys. They're not from here. Or they were taking pictures. It was pretty far out there. And when I went, I think it was, I want to say 2014, they had just instituted the law that you can no longer have a gasoline powered scooter, and all the scooters were electric. And, you know, civilization continued moving on. But yeah, as Carl points out, you don't have a choice. But they, yeah. they are really moving with that power behind them. They're choosing to enforce the conversion to electric cars. So I guess, but that's a whole nother, yeah. a whole nother topic.
Even if their CO2 footprint keeps growing faster than every other country, but no, let's not talk about that.
Right. That's because they use the wrong kind of coal in the generating plant.
Well, in the meantime, I support Japanese cars. Okay. So
all right.
that's yep. me. That's where I have put my money.
We there should all get Mazda cross coupes, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody.
And race them.
Everybody would be happy. Yeah, door slammer would really be slamming some doors there for sure. All right, what else do we have? Let's see. What do we want to do? Japan Mobility Show. Oh, just a reminder, next week is SEMA. So mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot at SEMA. Now, I think that we were just, yeah, Carl will be there. I'll be there. Anybody else going to SEMA?
No, nope.
Michelle has an actual job.
Yes.
And Sam doesn't have to go, so he's not going.
yeah, I'm not
sure. I have to go to SEMA to build up my immune system.
I was going to say, Mark, what disease are you going to come back with this time?
I don't know, man. It's never good. But that is happening next week. And there have been just a ton of, they're dribbling out all the cars that they're going to show there. I think the thing about Tokyo, the Japan Mobility Show and SEMA, I think you could make an argument in a sense that this is the sort of the resurgence of the car show, that we're seeing a lot of important cars being debuted at Tokyo. There's a lot coming up at SEMA. Toyota's got a whole bunch of, aftermarket kind of cars, but they are still significant cars. Honda's going to have a lot of stuff at the SEMA show. HRC, Honda Racing Corporation, is going to have things there. I think Nissan's got some stuff, if I'm not mistaken. I don't want to speak incorrectly about that, but SEMA will be a significant show this year, starting next week. And the Japan Mobility Show was also a big deal. So who knows? The LA Auto Show is coming up this month, right?
I think that'll put us back into perspective on some auto shows, unfortunately. But no, hopefully there'll be something going on at the LA Auto Show. I'm actually hearing good things about associated events around the LA Auto Show. Honestly, I'm actually aware of things they're doing that I don't think I'm supposed to talk about. But hopefully the LA Auto Show will be more than just two or three brands showing some important cars, which is really what it's been the last few years.
And here's a segue. At the LA Auto Show, the Racer Magazine is presenting their first creator awards, right? And my book has been nominated for one of the awards. So
well, that's an excellent segue, Sam. we're going from news to the reviews section, and we're going to start
it seems like you guys planned it was so smooth.
Yeah, we're going to start with a literary review. Sam Mitani, as I said when I introduced him, is a man of many talents. He wrote for how long at Road and Track? Were you there 20 years?
Yeah, 22, 23 years. Yeah.
Wow. My own.
Yeah.
Back in the glory days when everybody was eating shrimp. It was great. That's why the world shrimp population has dropped, because of the automotive journalism. So, but Sam, you've written and you've helped write movie scripts, but this seems to be kind of a subject that is near and dear to your heart, because it takes place in the exciting world of automotive journalism. So, Sam, tell us about your trilogy of books, the last one of which just came out. And don't be, get a little closer to the microphone so we can hear every subtle nuance.
You can hear me, though. Okay.
Yeah, I can.
Okay. Let's see. Well, it is a trilogy. It's called the Prototype Trilogy because that's the name of the first book. And the first book is the one that that kind of set me off on this path, because I've always wanted to write a book, and I had a good idea how to write this for a book, a book theme. And, what was great is after it was published, it won a pretty major award, won the gold medal in the thriller category, over about, a few thousand entries in a thing called the Next Gen Indie Book Awards. So that was, and that actually came with money. So, I got some cash out of that. And then, that got me noticed to another publisher who says, hey, what are you working on? And asked me, and I said, it was during COVID, and I was just kind of
doodly around, putting stuff up online. And he goes, yeah, you know, I want to be the first to read whatever you got next. So, I finished the second book and I sent it to him. It's called Red Mist, and it's about, a Chinese car company that does bad things using the Chinese car company as a front, you know, and so it's one of those. It's, my agent, put it nicely. He says, you know, my books are, Top Gear meets Jason Bourne. So if you're into thrillers and that kind of stuff.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. I'll say, I agree with that.
Yeah. And then the third, book came where, Carrara Media, a new publishing company, says, hey, we'd like to take your first two books and, you know, make, create, hardcover books out of them because, it was like, I think 3 years or so that the, books, the publisher's rights expired. So I had the rights to the books and I go, yeah, that'll be great. And, I told them, hey, you know, would it help if I wrote a third one just so you have something new to market too? They go, if you could finish it, you know, in like 7 months, 8 months, that'll be great. And usually these things take about a little over a year for me to write, right? Because a lot of research went into the first two. So I did finish it. And this was based on a movie script that me and my friend worked on. And, he was about to sell it, but then he was younger than me and he passed away suddenly, you know, and it was kind of a shock to me. And, I turned that movie script into a book and I kind of dedicated the book to him. And that became the third one called, Keys to the Empire. And, it kind of closed the book on the three, on the thrillers, you know, the three books. So.
Now, Sam, I got to ask you about one character in there. There's a guy named Mark Taylor for Auto News Weekly. Any similarity to persons living or dead? Pure coincidence?
Pure coincidence. None whatsoever. Mark.
I'm taking notes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mark, one more thing. And Carl and Michelle, you know, the first book, the prototype, just I got a call about 6-7 months ago from a Japanese publishing company saying they wanted to market a Japanese language version for the Japanese market.
Nice.
And it's coming out in December.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'll be published in Japan. My novel's going to Japan. And do any of you guys remember a movie called Drive My Car? A Japanese,
I had to watch that. It was 3 hours long. The longest 3 hours of my life.
Dude, it was a really depressing kind of movie.
It was so depressing.
It was. But the same company that produced that movie has a publishing company. It's a big publishing company. It's Taya, which is like a huge company in Japan. They're publishing the Japanese version of the prototype. So there you go.
Excellent. Yeah. I want you. The star of that movie was a Saab. Was it?
Yeah. Saab 900. Yeah. The
old Saab 900. And oh my God. I've had to watch it because it was car related. And I do things because of Catholic guilt. I feel I have to do them. And I was just, oh, this is so miserable. And
yeah, no, I almost wanted to kill myself after I watched
it. So both Sam and I both
watched it. I don't want to live anymore. You know, life's
do the hard care. That is not what Sam Mitani's books are like.
No.
His books they draw you right in. I didn't know what to expect because who knows? I thought I'd be swayed because of my adoration for Sam Mitani, the author. But then I thought, no, I have to read it. But it doesn't matter. It just draws you right in. The very first one, the prototype. You forget that it's set. Sometimes it's kind of funny because there are sort of insider things that you notice as being in the world of automotive journalism. And the one guy, Sam still hasn't told me who in the first book, Sam, the really bad, the terrible automotive journalist who was just such a jerk to everybody and is instantly killed. You won't say who that was.
No, but it might be based on someone true, but Michelle, I said might, okay? It might be.
Well, I'm
going to have you represent me, Michelle. So just
so Sam, I was told this person was kind of just this terribly arrogant and obnoxious type of a character. And once Mark told me that, it's like, well, that's easy. I've narrowed it down in our industry. I've narrowed it down to like, I don't know,
34, 45 guys. So,
yeah, exactly.
But it's not Mark, because there's another guy who's more like Mark.
That's right.
Mark, right.
Yeah. No, my character is very likable in the book. So let that be a lesson to us all. If you know anybody who has any talent as a writer, movies, whatever, be nice to them, because you're going to wind up a character in their book.
Okay. So
real quick, Sam, I just wanted to ask you, it's fascinating that the third book that you just published was started out as a script. I'm a big, like, my other life that I never got to live was like movie production. I would have loved to have been a Spielberg in a different life timeline. But certainly the idea of producing movies and writing screenplays is something I'm fascinated in. Do you think, I kind of sounds like the answer is yes for the third one, obviously, but do you think any or all three of your books would make great movies?
They would. Actually, I got a call from Amazon Prime, a major producer there, about the prototype. And and so we talked for a while, and he says, are you interested? Blah, blah, blah. But I guess the big thing is a book like that, because of all the car stuff, and it's so car centric, he says, you have no idea how much budget. Yeah. He says, you know, closing down roads. I mean, he says, so, you know, he says he's working on another project now, but he says, this is just the beginning. Let's keep talking. So it's kind of cool. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to say what he's worked on Amazon Prime, but it was one of the big ones, you know, the big dramas that I watched it. It was fantastic.
Can't we do everything with AI now? So you can have like a huge car chase and not spend a single dollar. Just tell the thing what to produce for you.
I'm telling you, AI has taken like, you know, press writing and that kind of stuff. Those jobs. I mean, they could even make stories, right? But they can't do it to this degree yet. So I think I'm safe for a while, you know? So,
hey, Sam, all I know is I demand the right to play myself in the movie. That's all I ask. Okay.
Well, you know, when I wrote that, you were a much younger man.
Oh, that hurts. Like a dagger to my heart.
But we're back to AI again. Okay, we need Mark Vaughn at age 30. And okay, now you've got it. So
I was less offensive then. Okay.
Don't let that Japanese book publisher do your movie, though. Just don't.
Yeah, I know. I have no care. Yeah.
Don't make it depressing.
Take someone else.
Yeah. So let me just tell where people could get it. All right. Of course you could get it at Amazon, or you could get it at CarraraBooks.com. And Carrara is the publisher of the,
how do you spell Carrara? Just like the Porsche?
Carrara, not Carrera. So C-R-R-A-R-A.
Okay.
C-R-R-A-R-A.
And the name is
.com.
The name of the book is Keys to the Empire, book three. Can you still get the first two books?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What's great about these is all three of them are connected, but you can read them separately, because there's not like one big story, and each of them has a different protagonist. Still, you know, the protagonist of the prototype does make an appearance in, you know, the other books too. So they're all in the same universe. You know, like the MCU, right? The Marvel Universe. But they're all kind of
exactly like the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So is the Mark Taylor character in the book three?
I think so. He's in book two, too, for sure.
Yeah, I know he's in two. Yeah. He's in one and two. That's all I care about.
Yeah, yeah.
All Final Fantasy.
He didn't get killed off by the poison fruit?
It's getting tempting. It's getting tempting.
All right. They are all three. Well, the first two are good books. I have not yet read The Keys to the Empire, book number three in the trilogy. That's Sam Mitani, Mitani, in case you're Googling it. And you can get it. Sam just told you where you could get it. Get it at Amazon.
So Audible. Audible is part of the Amazon universe, right?
Yeah, but it costs a lot of money. The Carrara guy was telling me to produce the audiobook. So we did one for the prototype, and it's on Spotify. It's not on Audible. So you could get it on Spotify. So,
nice.
And what's great about that is all the characters have different voices. So, you could listen to it like a movie. Yeah. So, please check it out. I think they did a really good job with that. You know, the audiobook. Because
all right. And Sam has agreed to give us each 10% of the profits, folks. Thank you. Thank you.
Sam, not the lawyer.
That is, you know, speaking of Japanese cars, Michelle drove one and is going to tell us about it. Michelle, what did you drive?
Right. Well, Acura was kind enough to let me have a week with their three-row SUV, which is the 2025 Acura MDX. They made a few changes over the 2024 for 2025. Mostly just a refreshed interior is what they did. This is one of the considered a premium brand. Kind of might be a surprise to some people, but yes, this is considered a premium brand. So it goes head to head with like the Infiniti QX60 or the Lexus TX, which are other three rows. And, you know, you could even argue maybe some of the Genesis GV80. So anyway, this one is, it's considered a midsize, which is kind of surprising to me, but yeah, it's a three row. No problem with making, you know, the two seats in the back fold down, give you a lot of cargo space. It's got 16 cubic feet back there. And with the third row down, you've got 39 cubic feet. The thing to remember when you're comparing this vehicle with the others in its class are that this is more of a performance car. So if you look at the Lexus or the Infiniti or even the Genesis, those are more considered for the person who wants posh and they want beautiful textures and they want a super quiet ride with, you know, the kids in the back and everything else. But Acura likes to bring a little bit of performance to the game. So if you're more of a performance oriented driver / car owner, then you should take a look at this one. Now the one I tested was the top trim level, the Type S, as in Sam, haha, get it? this one has a turbo V6 engine, 355 horsepower, and 4,776 pound curb weight. So it has a performance-oriented powertrain and drivetrain. And obviously Lexus and Infiniti, they don't offer that. So it's kind of in its own little class, based on what my research showed. There's an adaptive air suspension, and there's the things that really set it apart are the handling. If you put it in sport mode, you get a really nice drive experience. I found that the steering wheel was a little bit not too responsive, but when I put it in sport mode, then it was better, more dialed in.
It's probably electric. Is it electric power steering? Probably, so you can just change the response really quickly. And you said the air ride. So does it change the ride height automatically?
Adaptive. Yes, it's adaptive.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So air shocks on it at all four corners. So you can load it up with a bunch of stuff, and it'll rise up. And
exactly,
if you're going down the Autobahn, does it lower down or? Is that...
Well, you know, I don't know. I didn't test it like that. Sorry. All right. But there's a lot of family friendly features. There's the cabin talk. So if you're in the front, you can talk to the third row from the front, which is a thing that parents
without screaming, without yelling. Yes.
Yes, correct.
So that means it's like, there's like a microphone in the front and it projects it to the rear speakers.
Yes.
Yeah. That's cool.
So this is great, I think. And then for the people who are looking for luxury touches, you've got the Milano leather, heated and ventilated seats, and you know, you can get power massage if you want that. Heated steering wheel. But of course, for family people, you really want to look at safety and reliability. And of course, it's an Acura. It has that. So this is a really great vehicle for families with safety features, reliability, not to mention resale. It's very good. I'm sure Carl can speak to that, but Acuras generally hold their value. And I think all the luxury features really distinguish it from if you wanted to go, say, step down, if you wanted to look at like the Honda Passport or something like that, you're just going to find this has a little more luxury than those sort of step down type trim levels or makes and models. This pricing on this one starts at $52,550 and goes up to $77,000. So there's quite a big range depending on what trim level. There's five trim levels available. And the one I had tested in the high 70s.
Is it on the same platform as the Honda Passport?
I don't, I think it is. Carl's nodding yes.
Yeah,
Carl's he says nodding. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, so Carl says yes.
The truck platform, it's the Odyssey and the MDX and the even the Ridgeline. Yeah, they're all using the, mm-hmm. the same starting point of the platform. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been in an MDX, Carl?
Yes, I have.
Lately, and it's what did you think? Did you agree with Michelle's assessment?
I would, yeah. I mean, the, you know, Acura's tagline is precision crafted performance, and they are pretty serious about trying to have a certain level of kind of in driver engagement when you drive their vehicles, and especially if it's a Type S version. So I would agree with Michelle's description of exactly how it is. It's especially when you put it in the sport mode.
That that category, midsize SUV, has got to be the biggest category in America right now, right? I mean, there's probably nothing else that big.
There's a lot of compact SUVs too. You know, so that category, and by the way, like she said, the names are goofy. You know, midsize. I mean, this is a massive SUV, but all these vehicle sizes, the description that they've all grown, the quote unquote compact cars, you know, are like
right.
The Volkswagen Tiguan and stuff like that. These cars sometimes some have three rows in them on the quote unquote the Sorento. But anyways, so there's, you know, that the CRV and the RAV4 is like the number one selling segment. The RAV4, by the way, is the best selling car in the U.S. short of the right. three domestic
almost
cars.
A half a million.
Yeah, so that's a huge category with lots of volume, and so lots of manufacturers have jumped in there. Volkswagen Tiguan, all these kind of things. But the midsize is, I think, the second biggest segment. Mark, you know. It, because right. it's also right. huge in every way of sales and models.
Right. And so I was going to say, if you're into the driver experience, again, I have to go back to Mazda. If you're looking for an alternative that's not as expensive, but is, you know, sporty and considers the driver experience, look at the CX-90 or the CX-70 also in this segment.
I will say a couple of weeks ago, I had a CX-90, I think it was. And as soon as I got behind the wheel, you could feel the controls weren't jumpy, but they were much more responsive than you would expect in that class of vehicle. So, and I think you can probably say that of all of the Mazdas because of our friend and sometime co-host on the show here, Dave Coleman, down there at Mazda, making everything sporty. And it sounds like you can get much the same feel from what Michelle just told us in the Acura MDX. So.
Exactly. You're right.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Michelle. It is now my turn. I'm going to start it off with a quiz because everybody just loves a quiz. We'll turn this into a game show. What does the SL stand for in Mercedes SL?
I know.
Carl Brower.
Carl.
I'm going to probably butcher it, which is bad given my last name, but I believe it's Sports Leicht, but it's supposed to be Sports Light, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, just in looking through a little bit of research here, they actually changed what it stood for over the years, or what they claimed it stood for. Sport Light is what it was called in 1952 when the first SL came out. That being the 300 SL, the race car that did so well. You know, won Carrera Panamericana. It won, I don't know if it won Targa Florio, but it won a lot of stuff. And then for a while, they were calling it Super Licht. I say Licht, and I have a 46-word vocabulary in German, so maybe that's how you say it. I don't know. But, yeah, Sport Light, Super Light, either way you look at it, it is supposed to be kind of a sports car. It's not it actually goes just a little bit beyond the level of what we would consider a GT and maybe leans a little bit farther into the sports car category, I would say. And as I said, that started in 1952. And since 2022, these have been AMGs. They are no longer Mercedes. They are AMGs. So the car that I drove, and it was a heck of a week, let me tell you, was a 2025 AMG SL 63 SE Performance. So it is a hybrid drivetrain, first of all. So there's it's not a plug-in hybrid, but you can drive around with it in electric mode only. Now, the SLs that are offered right now, there are actually four of them, starting with a four-cylinder SL43 that makes 416 horsepower, which is still pretty good for a four-cylinder. They have an SL55, which has a twin-turbo V8, SL63, also a twin-turbo V8, and then the top of the line, if money is no object, the car that I had for one glorious week, the SL63 e-Performance. This car with its hybrid drivetrain makes 805 horsepower and, brace yourself, Gunther, 1,047 pound-feet of torque, twist, and torque on that baby. The plug-in hybrid element is really nice. I think it helps. Now, the thing I liked about this, I have maybe complained a bit about AMG's sort of the response, the handling, as Michelle described the MDX as being kind of just sporty, a little bit more sporty than everything else in the line. As soon as I got in to this thing and just drove it out of the driveway and down the block, I could tell that I really loved it, because AMGs, all the other AMGs that I've driven, seem to have like overboosted steering, and the throttle travel, the throttle response is non-linear. It just kind of jumps. Everything just jumps at you, and you turn the wheel and it's like yanks the car over, but it won't allow any body roll and all this stuff. But on this car, on the SE Performance, it didn't do that. It was not a problem at all. It was just that there was torque available as soon as you stepped on the throttle, and it seemed like all of the torque was there, and it progressed nicely up through the gears. It's the kind of car that while you're driving it around, just, you know, going to the grocery store, you are enjoying it just because of the way the throttle responds and the way the steering feels really nicely connected. I was just really impressed with it. 805 horsepower, twin turbo plug-in hybrid drivetrain. I just enjoyed the heck out of this car. It was a convertible. It's a convertible soft top now. The gone is the hard top. It is now a soft top. It is technically a 2+2, meaning that the back seat, I don't know, maybe it's for pets, maybe it's for luggage. I don't think you'd want to put a person back there, but the two people up front are going to have a great time. And I just enjoyed driving this thing. Either one of you guys had, Carl, you've probably driven an SL, right?
I was on the launch for, I believe, this generation, like you said, in 22 when it came out in Palm Springs, and had the exact same reaction. By the time we got back to the coast driving the thing from the Palm Springs area back to the LA Orange County area, I was madly in love with the thing. I just thought, wow, these are really well executed, and not like you wouldn't expect it. It's the Mercedes two-door sports car with AMG name, and now attached. Mercedes AMG is what they're officially called. So you kind of expect it's not going to be bad, but it's not just not bad. It's really good. It's really well executed.
It is so well balanced. All the components, the steering, the braking, the suspension, just really nicely done. I'm down to less than a minute in the show here.
Wait, what is it going to cost you?
Oh, that's what I was going to do. Yeah. You can get one, bare bones, $208,300. As tested, $230,150. That will, you know, if you have to ask, really, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
But it is worth it. It's not like you're getting in this thing and it's some kind of poser mobile. It was really,
it's nice. Essentially the Mercedes Turbo S, like 911 Turbo S competitor. And those aren't cheap either.
It's,
so
it's much more comfortable, and it's bigger. It just feels more formidable. Okay. We are down to 15 seconds. Michelle, quickly, what is our website?
Oh, we're on Facebook. We are The Car Show, 90.7 FM on KPFK. Join us, follow us, like us.
And everybody go and buy Keys to the Empire by Sam Mattani on Amazon. And we will see you next week here on The Car Show.
Donate your used car, truck, or boat to the KPFK Vehicle Donation Program. It's an easy way to help support KPFK and receive a tax deduction. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO. An operator will arrange a good time to pick up your vehicle. 877-KPFK-AUTO or go online to kpfk.org. On Sunday, November 2nd, from noon to 3 p.m. at the community-owned center in Leimert Park, there will be a celebration of Asada Shakur's life and her 46th year of freedom from injustice.
Assata Shakur, former member of the Black Panther Party and the first woman ever to be named as a terrorist on the FBI's most wanted list, died in Havana, Cuba on September 25th, 2025. A celebration of Assata Shakur's life Sunday, November 2nd from noon to 3 p.m. in Leimert Park at the community-owned center located at 4276 South Crenshaw Boulevard at 43rd Street. Further information is available at tinyurl.com